Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Saturday Morning Tech Show. My name is Todd Cochran, and it's been a couple of weeks since I've done this. I've been half across the planet and back. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But we're up on live stream today, kind of doing a testing that service again, and we're also up at live.geeknewscentral.com. Want to welcome our two guests to the show today. We've got who we got up on top? We got a new guest on top. We've got Cliff Ravenscraft. Cliff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, everybody. I've never been better. It gets better every single day.
And, you know, we've got you HD this morning. So, Rob, I've got Cliff HD, and we've got Rob on the bottom in SD. So we'll see if it hangs all morning. How are you, Rob?
Doing all right. It's just not fair. Yeah, I want to be HD. I want to be with the cool kids.
I think what it was is I think Cliff came in first and probably got the bigger bandwidth pipe. So that's probably what happened. But we'll see if it changes. And what happens here, Cliff, is I don't know if you've seen it on Skype or not, but if you get a little bit bandwidth challenged, it breaks it down from HD to SD, and then it it doesn't qualify. Go ahead.
I look better in audio anyway, so
y'all keep cranking. So
well, my live stream broadcaster is complaining about bandwidth. I'm running it through a secondary bandwidth connection this morning that I haven't used on, because normally I run the live stream through the connection you guys are on, and it's we'll see if it complains. It's just anyway, it's a secondary stream. Primary stream is still up at live.geeknewscentral.com. Nothing but technical difficulties. Hey, so guys, I was out in Texas for a week and got back, and I was home for like 3 days, and I left for Japan. I was in Japan for, I guess, 7 or 8 days, and so been back since Wednesday morning, and of course you come home and you think you're staying ahead of your inbox and everything else, and you get home and there's, you know, all the calls that you thought you got, but you didn't get, and just demos. It's been crazy. We've been busy. All of a sudden, it's just been, everyone wants a generator, and it's good for business, but it just keeps us busy. So you're going to start seeing a whole bunch of new media platforms being launched. We got a bunch of guys that are finally deciding to take their new media or their podcast networks and centralizing in a single location. And it's nice that they chose us to run on their, basically have their back end. So it's kind of cool. But so I've been doing demos for the last couple of days and writing proposals that go along with any type of new business stuff. But that's here nor there. So Rob, I've seen a couple of your emails. How you been? You been staying busy?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. Things are charging along.
And Cliff, I know you probably are busy getting ready for, I think you've got your selections made for New Media Expo, haven't you? You've got all that stuff put together?
We are pretty much ready to wrap up everything on the podcasting track for New Media Expo. I just confirmed Andy Anacco is coming. He's going to be doing a super session talk there.
I
have two more sessions that I'm currently waiting for some final proposals as far as the actual titles and descriptions, but I'll have some announcements to make on there soon.
I don't even know who Andy is. Who's that?
Andy Anacco. He is from MacBreak Weekly. So if you ever watched MacBreak Weekly, he's been on there since the beginning.
Yeah, I don't watch any Mac shows, so that's probably why I don't know who he is.
Ah, see? Yeah. There you go.
See, also... Yeah, he also does a show on the 5x5 network. So,
oh, okay. And I know.
Yeah, it's the Anacco Almanac or something like that.
Yep, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, so he's a tech reporter for them. He's very interesting guy. He's even been featured in multiple Apple/Mac documentaries in the past as well. So he's pretty well known in the geek Apple fandom community.
Well, that's cool. That's, you know, it just goes to show you that you don't always know everybody in the space, and it's not like there's very many of us. There's 60,000 people creating content or something like that. So,
That's all.
It's expanding quickly though. As far as I'm concerned, I don't suspect that I can keep up with all of them, and I think probably within the next 2 or 3 years we should see a double or tripling in the size of our podcasting community overall.
You know, I get people in that are, you know, I get people that always, you know, people always want to talk to me on the phone, and it's hard. It's hard to do phone calls because, you know, they just want to talk, and sometimes they're just getting started, and I look the person up online to try to figure out who they are and what stage they're at. It's you know, it's kind of bad to have to filter that way, but I just can't talk to everyone all the time. It's just impossible to. If I did, I wouldn't get any work done. So I really try to push people off on email as much as I can. It's tough. So, and living in Hawaii, the time difference doesn't help either. Is all, you know, all of a sudden no one's available. You know, the only time they're available is 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'm like, well, I'm not getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and having a discussion. So anyway, let's, I just got a couple of things I want to talk about before we get into the full-blown content. And we're going to talk about new media today a little bit. We're going to talk about some topics that have been kind of raging in the space as well, along with some regular tech topics. But I want to remind everyone that we have... starting Monday, the podcast awards are starting and nominations open. And of course, Cliff, I want to thank you. You're one of our corporate sponsors this year. So those of you that get over to podcastawards.com, make sure you go over and see the podcast Answer Man website. And it's a basic, is it going to load? Yep, it's going to load. So basically, Cliff's got all the information there on learning how to podcast, and he's got a consulting business and stuff. So definitely check it all out, and check Cliff out over there at podcastanswerman.com. Of course, you can check Cliff out at gspn.tv as well, and all his family of shows. But yeah, so we're ready to go. We've had great support this year. We've made enough money already to pay for the trophies. That was I ordered them, $37.25, I think is the total. Yes, $3,725. So we're off to a good start. We actually are a little bit on the plus side right now, which is awesome, because I'm never on the plus side at this stage in the game. I don't think in any of the years we've ever done the awards, we've ever been basically had stuff paid for at this point. So I'm pretty pleased I don't have to come out of pocket this year. But
I'd like to say something if I can, Todd. Sure. First and foremost, I want to say thank you to John Dumas. He's the entrepreneur on fire over there. He became a corporate sponsor after I convinced him that it's a worthy investment. But I want to speak to the podcasters. I'd been a quote-unquote podcast sponsor of the Podcast Awards for several years. And I will say it's the best $250 you can spend on your podcast if you're looking to grow your audience. Hands down, this site, during the nomination process, and specifically during the 15 days of voting, your little tiny image of your podcast artwork on the sidebar of that site gets burned into people's minds. And what's amazing is when people go there and they're when they're going in there to vote for shows, they're voting for the things that have already risen. It's the cream of the crop, has already risen to the top. So people will literally go there because they've been invited by somebody, a podcaster, to go vote for them. And then all of a sudden they think to themselves, wow, this is a great place for me to go and look for new content. I'm in the market for a couple new shows. And I'm telling you right now, just getting nominated is one thing, but having your artwork on those sidebars, Todd, you know, it's millions of impressions. But let me tell you, $250, it's on there for the entire year. Podcasters, if you haven't considered doing it yet, go and sponsor at the podcast level. I'd been doing that for years, and I don't say as a direct result of that, but certainly, you know, the exposure there has helped, and now I'm at the corporate level, so I'm excited about that.
You know, people just, you know, it's a ridiculously low price for what is the exposure for a full year, and you know, Comedy Forecast and some of those guys have been with this year after year after year because they know the value of being there. You know, and what it is it's true. Even though you may not get nominated, you're still right there, and you're like, people are like, okay, I've looked at the stuff in the middle. What's all this other stuff that's on here? And So, you know, I have to really balance it too, because once we get to a certain point where this page gets filled, and actually when we, it'll get longer as this, you know, as the process goes on and we get people on the nomination section, I got to make sure that, you know, at some point I cut it off because there'll be too much on the sidebars. But we added something new this year. We put, and I don't know why we haven't done this in the past, but we've got all the past winners as well. We got a page with all the past winners, links, and all the categories, and, you know, give people some indication of who's won in the past and all the winners since 2005. So they're all in there, and people can take a look. And so as a, I guess, just as a reminder, if you're a listener, you can, when the nominations open, you can nominate a single show in the top two categories, People's Choice and Best Produced, and then you can nominate that same show in, let's say, comedy. So really what you get is 22 total, not a 20 total individual nominations, and then two unique nominations, and they're kind of separated. So you can nominate like, you know, X show in People's Choice and X show in comedy. And you can also, nominate Z show in Best Produced and Z show in Culture and Arts, but everything else has to be single categories. And I just want to remind people, they get one time to fill out that nomination form. If they miss shows and categories, they are done. They're done for the year. So they get one time to fill out the entire form. And it's, you know, it might be a little tedious, but most people don't listen to 20 different categories. So they, you know, I think the average last year was 12 or 13 nominations per listener. When they came in, they did 12 or 13 different
nominations. Todd.
Yeah.
Can I petition for you to in the future add a kids and family category?
Well, the challenge is that each category to process takes about 10 hours. Okay. And then the money. It really, because if we look at each category, if you really divide it out, the trophies this year were $3,700. So if you take $3,700 and you divide that by 22, it's about $170 just to add a category in order to cover a trophy cost. And what we tried to do with the categories was follow the iTunes directory. We basically have their top level categories, and you know, it's not perfect. I had a guy ask me today, well, how come you don't have comedy commentary? And I'm like, well, you can be under Pod Save Music.
Comedy commentary.
Yeah. So anyway, that was, so that's kind of the reasons why we have a challenge in adding categories. But anyway, that's here nor there. But don't forget, again, Monday, October 1st, for 15 days, the nominations are open. And then we'll start voting probably on November 1st. That's what I would expect. And the folks at the New Media Expo are actually going to be helping us out this year. We're going to have the actual award ceremony being a actual ceremony and not some on the floor event. We're actually going to have a venue, a time, place, food, you know, maybe even a little entertainment, and we'll do the awards like a regular banquet style. So we're going to be given each podcaster that gets nominated too. This is pretty exciting. What they have done is they've given some incentives this year. So even if you don't make the list, even if you're not one of the 220 shows that make the list, you get a free exhibit pass or 50% off the content creator pass. And that's, for every finalist, they get a 50% off the creator pass. If you are a nominee, you get 50% off the exhibit pass. And then we're going to work on some special speaking and live podcasting opportunities for the 220 nominated shows. And Rick and I are still working through that process, and one of his, one of the other folks there at New Media Expo. So that's pretty cool. And we're looking forward again to having the ceremony again at the award ceremony to be at New Media Expo in January. So that's only like 100 days away or something. So that time is clicking away pretty quick. Well, guys, you know, I have to bring this topic up because I think, Cliff, you were on a show a couple of days ago talking about this, but there's a new headline.
And, yeah, I saw it.
And I think it's a little bit doom and gloom. And I do want to say before I get into this topic that we're going to come out with a statement. A Raw Voice is going to come out with a statement basically encouraging folks that are currently on Feedburner, don't get scared, don't move, don't do anything rash. But we are telling people that are not on Feedburner, absolutely don't use it. But those that are on, don't get scared. There are a variety of contingency plans that we can work on in the interim. But here's the headline that the folks at TechCrunch said yesterday. The Feedburner death watch continues. Google kills AdSense for feeds. And, you know, we just recently had an outage on Feedburner where there was, no stats and some services for about 5 days. And we've had some other scares with Feedburner killing the Feedburner.jp domain, which caused us an incredible amount of tech support calls and questions. I don't know. I really don't think they're going to kill Feedburner. Do you guys think? I'm going to let Rob start because Rob's been down there quiet patient. Rob, do you think Google's going to kill Feedburner?
I mean, I would say that it's very, very possible, but I think it's going to be done in a very, it could happen, but I think if it did happen, they would do it in a very methodical way. They would give people notice. They would have this kind of stepped process for doing it. And you can see maybe they're starting to pull some pieces out of it. That's usually a sign that they are trying to kind of pull it apart and dismantle. And I think overall, I think what's happening at Google is they're kind of trimming the things out of their services that aren't core to what they do. And I'm not sure that Feedburner is really core to what Google is all about these days.
You know, and as much as I would think that they wouldn't, I wouldn't be surprised. They have not invested, you know, really anything in the service in many years. Nothing has changed. Nothing has been, improved. And, you know, they continue to cut stuff. So, you know, it does make me nervous as much as I've never been a Feedburner proponent. Guys that have been around me for years know that. Just for this exact reason, I tell people this. You know, this is your intellectual property. This is what you know. You are. You know, there's certain instances if you're on like Podbean, or if you're using Libsyn's RSS feed, or if you're using Mevio's RSS feed. Those are RSS feeds you don't own. And those companies can change policies, things happen, and I'm not saying any of these companies are going out of business, so don't get me wrong on that, but I'm just saying you don't own that. So what happens when, you know, if you're on one of those services and the service goes away, which we've seen in the years, if you weren't on Feedburner, you'd be screwed. You'd have lost your way to recover, and you'd have to go to Apple and ask them to change the feed, and it's painful, and it's a month later, you might be back up and running on your same iTunes subscription if you're lucky. But for folks that have their own .com, I've said for years it's simply insane. You know, even in 2004 we had CSM systems that were creating RSS feeds that were fine for podcasting. There was no issue with RSS feeds. They've always been fine. So that's why Geek News Central, if I go over to my website, you know, that's why since October of 2004, when someone clicks on that RSS feed, guess what? It's the same feed that's been there since, I'm in Google Chrome, so it's acting weird. But anyway, that subscribe RSS icon for the audio and part of the show is always been podcast.xml. Or I can use the iTunes link. It's always been the same thing. But those that are in, those that are in FeedBurner now, you know, for whatever reason, they decided to use it. You know, they've got a dilemma. Do I stay or do I go? So Cliff, what are you doing? Are you staying or are you going?
I'm staying. I've been with FeedBurner since 2005. I've never once experienced an outage of service. Never once have had an issue.
But you probably,
I'm completely happy.
But you can't say that you haven't had delayed feeds. We have massive records, and we see it on a daily basis where someone publishes their show, and FeedBurner might pick up the feed in 12 hours. Might.
Okay.
And you know, some it's instantly, but sometimes, you know, FeedBurner's they just sit there and they just don't update the feed. And I'm like,
all of my shows are weekly, so if it's 12 hours later, it's 12 hours later. That's not a huge deal for me. The big thing is that I subscribe to all my own shows. And so after I've published them, usually I'll just open up my podcatcher because I listen to shows after I'm done anyway. And if I don't see all my shows come through, I'll just say, that's weird. And then I just go into feedburner.com, click on troubleshoot ties, and click that little resync now button, and boom, it's there, done. Immediately, instantly out there. And over since 2005, I've maybe had to do that 10 times.
But the thing is, the question is why? You've got your own domain.
In 2005, I was on a different domain. In 2006, I had three different domains. And today I have different domains than what I had since 2006. I have gspn.tv, which, by the way, runs 27 different podcasts off that one domain. Every category is its own podcast, and every category has its own feed. And yes, today there's this wonderful company called Blueberry that has a plugin that has these wonderful category-based, channel-based functionality that did not exist when I had, you know, 7 or 8 podcasts back in 2006.
But you got to admit, you're unique. Most people have a single feed.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing. So the first question, though, is why am I on it? So that's why. And it allowed me to burn each category as a separate podcast off of a single installation of WordPress. And not to mention that back in the day, the biggest plugin wasn't PowerPress. The biggest plugin was PodPress.
True.
PodPress broke PodPress broke a lot when there was an update to WordPress. And so that was a big issue. And as a consultant, it caused me a lot of work for my clients. People had to pay money out of pocket to fix those things. Whereas if they had PowerPress, they would have never had to pay me anything because their stuff would have continued working just like mine did. Now, over time, PowerPress came out. You guys came in, and I was completely opposed to using PowerPress because I didn't like any plugin that tried to do all this stuff. I developed a really good relationship with Angelo Mandato, and he and I got to talking. He says, Cliff, what's your problem? He actually changed some of the things the way that and created these categories, and you guys created the channels and stuff like that. Since then, I've been using your guys' plugin, but there are times where for once, let me go ahead and set up one of my clients without relying on FeedBurner. And I haven't tried it a lot, so granted that, but out of the three times that I've tried it, twice it did not work. And the reason why is because the category type of podcasting and the channel type of podcasting would not work because there was a conflict with another plugin. And that one plugin that I think is the biggest issue was some W3 Total Cache or something else. They were putting some kind of comment at the bottom of a feed, and that was keeping it from creating the feed and all that stuff. And they say, well, all you need to do is have them go in and do this setting. It's like, listen, you don't understand. This is a client who has 750,000 subscribers to their blog. I'm not going in and requesting that they make any changes to anything.
But that caching plugin that was the issue, if you're using FeedBurner, that same exact information is being copied into the FeedBurner feed. So that issue,
how,
would not be eliminated.
No, but here's the deal, though. What was happening is the regular feeds for the categories were showing on WordPress with no problem at all. But if I tried, but the Blueberry created channel podcasts were not working. And that's what, so basically I went back to the basic settings, turned off the channel features, turned off the category features, and boom, there's my category for WordPress. And I took that to FeedBurner and boom, it's out there. It's up and running.
What was going on was caching. It's happening to people every day. And people don't realize that these caching plugins are truncating all your feeds.
Yeah.
So it's not just our feed.
I'm not complaining. I'm just saying.
But let's be clear. It's also the WordPress, the standard version WordPress feed. It was truncating and adding those comments too. So it's not just our stuff. So if you're running that caching plugin, that caching plugin is still adding those comments to that feed, and that is still getting copied into FeedBurner.
You're absolutely right. And here's the deal: but it's not keeping FeedBurner from sending your MP3 files, your enclosures, out to your podcast subscribers. That's all I care about. And so here's where I am. The dilemma I am in is that I am helping thousands of people. If you go to learnhowtopodcast.com, thousands of people are going through that tutorial. And do you know how many emails are generated by people who say, Cliff, this isn't working for me?
Do you know how many tech support? Okay, here's where I see it. And this is where we see it, because we're dealing with the podcasters that we're dealing with. Over 35,000 people that are using our plugin. How many tech support calls have I gotten on our feed having an issue with iTunes? In the last year, one or two. How many tech support calls do we get with people that are running our feed, pushing it into FeedBurner? At least 5 a day. So,
yeah.
And what we tell them is, sorry, we can't help you. To us, from our perspective, FeedBurner is doing more damage and hurting people and more. I'm just going to tell you straight up, I would never, ever, 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 and not ever would I ever tell a client to use FeedBurner. Never. If they have their own .com, I think it's an intellectual property suicide, FeedBurner. And because I now have a product that works, I can unplug PowerPress from our system. I can unplug PowerPress, deinstall the plugin. That feed will still be there, and that feed will still feed iTunes with not as much information that they need, but it'll have the enclosure data. It won't have all the other fancy stuff that you normally have, but it will still work. And my site will continue to move down the road whether I need PowerPress or not. And same thing with the category feeds. Category feeds, we don't change any of the functionality of FeedBurner. The FeedBurner feeds that are create WordPress just adds data to the feeds that WordPress creates. When it's category, channels, that's all we don't generate nothing new. That's something that WordPress is capable of creating by on its own. And so I guess, you know, it's a difference in mindset. And I've from a long time, yeah. I've always said, why don't use FeedBurner? Now,
no, I've heard you, and you're not alone. I've heard hundreds of people say, hey, Cliff, don't ever do this. But you know what? Here's the deal. It's never failed me. It's never failed anybody that I've set up on it. And personally, one-on-one through coaching, consulting, and online training courses, I've helped hundreds. And through the tutorials, I've helped thousands. And it's never failed anyone yet.
So what? So what happens when they shut it down?
Well, hold on. So that's assuming that they'll ever shut down. I see no indication that they're shutting down. I do not see a death watch. I see a company that's closed the blog that didn't post to in over a year. And whoa, that doesn't indicate they're shutting things down. They're just indicating, why do we have this thing when we're not posting to it? Then they shut down a Twitter account. Big deal. Okay. I shut down Twitter accounts. Doesn't mean I'm going anywhere.
They just shut down the sole thing that was making any money whatsoever for FeedBurner. And what is Google? It's a public company that has to make money.
Well, then maybe, I don't know, maybe they're behind the scenes working on some way of integrating some kind of new method for generating income from this product. I don't know if they are. But the one thing I do know is that Google does rely on content creators out there. I mean, there's no doubt that WordPress and other blogs are given a good deal of create content for Google to put out there. Google happens to know that they've got hundreds of thousands of bloggers and podcasters that are using this service. I don't think that we're going to just be left out in the cold. And two things. Number one, yes, they just degraded their API and they're going to shut it down October 20th. They've let us know that for almost a year now that that was coming. So we know that they're going to notify us if things are going to change. And number two, I think that what happened this weekend, by the way, you said their stats and some other services went down. No, it was just their stats. That was the only thing. Nobody missed a beat when it came to syndicating their feed out to anyone. But the stats went down. I think is the greatest thing in the world that's happened because there was another competing company that has a paid service that has been doing fear mongering. I won't even mention their name. You can if you want, but
I'm not going to.
Here's the deal though, is this competing service has been blogging about this company that Google's shutting things down. And that's just not the case. And what I love about this is that on Friday, as soon as they recognized that all their stats were at zero, they went to feedburnerstatus.blogspot.com and says, known issue, we're working on it. And then I wrote my blog post over at podcastanswerman.com/feedburnerfuture. And I said, hey guys, wait until Monday, go out and enjoy your weekend. The world is not ending. You know, the Mayan calendar says we still got a couple more months. So let's just enjoy this weekend. We got one life to live. Come back Monday. If it's still not working, then let's start talking. So, and then, of course, what happens is it gets updated a couple of days later, and boom, all the stats that came in over the weekend have been restored to all accounts.
So, Steve,
this, to me, says FeedBurner is still working on things. They're communicating to us, and I think it's a great thing that happened this weekend.
So, Rob, with Google's ongoing depreciation of RSS, you know, and they've been doing this for a number of years and a number of services, you know, do you think Cliff has a reason to be worried?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm trying to look at it from kind of the 30,000 foot view and am wondering if going forward, if we need to be pushing for people to not rely on FeedBurner. So there's fewer people that could be affected in the long run if Google decides to get out of the feed business. So I guess that's from an aggregator perspective, I would hate to see FeedBurner go away because it would break a ton of feeds. And I think it may be better in the long run to encourage podcasters to own their own feeds. Just trying to do the right thing there. I mean, really, what is the real benefit of having a FeedBurner feed? It's so you can have one feed that lives in like in iTunes or in Zune. And yeah, if your server changes, you can change the root, you know, feed address, right, really easily and not have to change all the endpoints. And then secondarily, there's probably some deeper tracking, you know, that's there as well. But is that worth the risk in the long run of maybe possibly this service going away? And shouldn't we be encouraging podcasters to own their own feeds and not necessarily rely on a Google to supply that?
Basically, we're going to say from this point on, if you have a FeedBurner feed, stick with it and let's cross our fingers that they don't cross. But if you're new, no way, no how, don't use it. It's not trustworthy. They haven't updated the service since 2007. There hasn't been a single piece of new code written in 5 years. And when they acquired it, they just acquired it. They haven't done nothing to it. With the FeedBurner API being shut down, that's going to affect a bunch of publishers to begin with. And the search engine roundtable, basically it says, hey, no one's monitoring the service forums. Those have been MIA for a while. So, and what really concerned me is when they killed feedburner.jp. Why did they do that? You know, if feedburner.com is safe and it is going to be a viable product and FeedBurner is going to continue, why did they kill feedburner.jp? Was that a testing the waters to see how many people would scream? I don't know. But the majority of Japanese podcasters were using feedburner.jp And it was, for us, it was 2 weeks of people that were absolutely panicked. And quite frankly, they got hosed. They are, you know, some of them are still waiting for Apple to update their feeds. And many of them have just created new listings in iTunes and have sacrificed, you know, tens of, we saw just immediately Japan podcaster stats just dropped off the cliff. So I'm hoping they don't do something. I can't imagine that they would, but.
Well, also think about, you know, where are the priorities of Google? They're around YouTube, right?
Yeah.
YouTube is the biggest. Well, yeah. I mean, but as far as a podcaster is concerned and the podcast community, I would say that the biggest competition is YouTube.
For sure.
So I think Google has a little bit of a conflicting kind of an interest here. I think they would love to drive more podcasters solely into YouTube. I'm not saying that's what they're going to do here. I'm just speculating as you think about it from a business perspective. You know, I'm not sure what the costs are for them to maintain the feed burner service. I think it's just mainly bandwidth. They're not investing in any, you know, coding or any engineering to improve it or anything like that. So those are signs that the company is not prioritizing it. Right, they're keeping it alive, they're keeping the heartbeat beating, but it would be very easy for them over a period of time to tell the community that they were going to shut it down, and they probably would do it, you know, like 6 months ahead of time or 3 months ahead of time. But it's a possibility, I would say, just based on what we're seeing in what they're doing with the service today, that is a possibility that it could happen at some point. I can see where it doesn't align to any priorities that the company has. So I think it is a concern that, and as podcast kind of spokespeople of sorts, we probably need to be raising a red flag that it may not be best in the long term, right, to encourage new people to use FeedBurner.
You know, one thing that the folks at TechCrunch says, and their feeds are all being delivered by FeedBurner, as they say, many publishers, including TechCrunch, rely on the service to publish their RSS feeds. It's time to reconsider this, as the writing is clearly on the wall. There are virtually no alternatives to FeedBurner, though publishers can obviously just manage their own feeds. And I think that's so ironic, because that's what I've been saying for years. Publishers can manage their own feeds. And I think what podcasters worried about was that they weren't able to get responses from Apple. I think Apple's become more responsive. You know, we can email Apple, and within about an hour, we can get a podcaster's feed updated if our, you know, if our rep is around. So, you know, they've been pretty responsive in getting things changed. The forums section is definitely still lacking. If you go through the forums, it might be a couple of weeks, but, and then, you know, it's, you know, I've always said, and I know, Cliff, where you're coming from, and don't get me wrong, I understand why you used it, but I've always said that the RSS feed is the lifeblood of a show. And, you know, that is, that's what keeps companies like GoDaddy and, the companies that are the sponsors, that keeps my numbers even, Steven, so that I don't have a drop in audience. Because it'd be real easy for someone to say, oh, that just died. How come I'm not getting, you know, because the general audience member, they're not going to know. You know, they know they subscribed. And if it all of a sudden just quits updating, well, he must have quit, unless they come back to the website or listen to an episode. I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens down the road. It'll be pure mayhem if they decide to shut down, though. It'll be pure mayhem.
And a PR nightmare. I mean, the people that would be affected would be going to the web, and it would be a PR nightmare for Google. And that's why, again, it doesn't concern me as much.
Well, Google has shut down a lot of services, and people have screamed and yelled, and Google's like...
Yeah, but we're talking about those services affect maybe a small percentage of various bloggers and stuff like that. This would affect almost all.
I don't think almost all. I find very few. The thing is, most people today, you got to understand, podcasters rely on RSS more than bloggers do. there's very few people using readers to read blogs. You know, there it's people are not subscribed like they were in 2004. It'll impact podcasters considerably more than it'll affect bloggers.
If I look at just a rough kind of view of how many of the shows that submit to Zune are using FeedBurner, I would say it's probably 10 to 15% has been my kind of, if I think about it on a, you know, like the last 6 months or something like that, there's lots of shows that are not using FeedBurner.
Thank God.
Yeah. But there's still that 10 to 20% that are still using FeedBurner for new shows.
If I was going to come up with something different, I'm going to come up with something more along the lines of, okay, if you really want to take ownership of your own domain, then don't even allow a plugin to do it for you. Don't allow anything to do it. Manually create the thing yourself in a text editor, or use a piece of software that is going to output essentially the same thing, and then just FTP it up to your site.
That is that's why would you do that? Because the default RSS feed in WordPress alone can be submitted to iTunes without PowerPress in there. Why would you do that?
Just because, I mean, if I'm going to be a control freak and control it, I want total control. I want to control it all.
But that's most people. That's too hard.
No, well, hand doing it, yes, and that's why I'm saying, there was a service out there, and it might even still be active today. Feeds for All, over at feedsforall.com, you can download a little software, and it'll do that for you. I don't know if I've never tried that software.
I don't think it's been updated since like 2005.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I was going to do this, I would probably hire some developers to actually write me a program to do that. So that's probably what I would do. If I were to ever leave FeedBurner, which I have no plans to do. But if they ever said, hey, we're shutting down in 6 months, I would spend 6 months having my own program written to create my own RSS feed manually. Outside of WordPress, I'd still publish to WordPress, but I'd also publish to my little software program that would basically go up there and replace my XML file each time I have an update.
Yeah, I think that there is a need for something like that, and the ones that have been out there, just like Todd said, haven't been updated in years and years, and they're not really supporting the current tags. So that's been the problem, you know.
But Rob, why would you do that if the software does it already for you?
Well,
WordPress is WordPress is not going to pull RSS out of
not everybody's on WordPress.
Yeah, well, that and you may not want to use a WordPress type of software. You just might want to build it from scratch. I mean, build a site from scratch, or you just don't want. Let's say the podcaster just wants to use like Facebook or something like that as their podcast page.
I think the percentage on that, I'd be curious to see what the percentage is. I don't think it's very high of actual content creators that aren't on WordPress. I think we get like maybe one.
Well, I think it's low. Yeah. I think it's low because there's not a lot of options.
Right.
You know, I think that's part. I've got a feed that I've got a couple of feeds. Like right now, the Microsoft Keynote podcast is actually was hand coded by me and is sitting on my own server. and I have to actually open that up in a text editor and add episodes to it because I don't want to have it on a WordPress type of platform, right? So if a content creator just wants to have an RSS feed that sits on a server and to manually update it, there really are really crummy tools out there to do that today.
You know, and we've gotten requests before to write plugins for like Joomla. I think we've had one request to write for Joomla, and I can't think of anything else. I'd be honest with you, if anyone else has ever asked for any other type of for us to write a plugin, I just don't know of anyone else.
I The thing is, I want something as a consultant and as a coach that's going to work for everyone, no matter who you are. And that's what I'm looking for. And I'll never forget the day that I had this guy who created his own Dreamweaver static HTML page. And he's like, listen, you can't understand. This thing's got so many SEO. If you search for 3,000 different terms, I'm always the number one. I make about $200,000 a year from my website. I am not switching to WordPress. I want my static HTML pages. I'll update it. Nope. Just tell me how I can do this. And then we just created an RSS feed for him and fed it out to FeedBurner. And boom, I said, and if you ever change it in the future, we can always change the original feed to whatever you want.
So if you look at it, though, 99% of the people are not in that situation.
Well, I don't know that 99%, but I would say it's 90%, 95% are not in that situation. And the fact is that for those other 95% of the people, that they're still, FeedBurner still works for them as well. And I understand what you guys are saying. But you have to understand, regardless of what's happened recently, what you're saying today is not any different than what people were saying in 2006.
Oh no!
I know you're saying that there are some, you know, there's the death watch because of these things, but I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
And I also have to look out for, you know, for our clients and try to give them the best advice we think is possible. And I'm just. I just don't think at this point, in all honesty, I don't think FeedBurner is a, and we can agree to disagree, but I do not think.
But you thought that in 2004, though.
No, I emphatically said not to use FeedBurner. And because I never understood why people, thing is, though, I understood why some people had to use it. Okay, I understand why some people had to use it. But people that had their own .coms never had to use it. Never. Not even from the very first podcast. Even when I started, when Apple, we didn't have to really worry about it until when iTunes came in and having these extra tags. And even then, we really didn't need them. So even from the very beginning, the RSS feed, and I was on movable type, the RSS feed in movable type was able to be used in podcast catchers. Even in the very, very early days on movable type, the RSS feed on WordPress was able to be used in Apple iTunes in the early days without a plugin. Still to this day, you can completely unplug PowerPress and you'll have no problem feeding your feed to iTunes. It just won't have the album art, you won't have the extra iTunes summary tags. You'll have just like two or three pieces, very basic stuff that will feed them. Your listing will look like crap, but you can still feed iTunes. And so, you know, so my point of view was from the very beginning, why trust a third party with this so valuable piece of intellectual property? This thing is like, well, you just think about, just imagine the chaos if today, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but what happened if Friday, FeedBurner, and I'm not saying this is going to happen, but let's say yesterday FeedBurner went down and they took 5 days to get the service back up like they did to get the stats back online. So what's going to happen for those 5 days?
What about the days back in 2007 when I relied on a third-party service to host my media files? And for 3 or 4 days, their media CDN service was completely down because of some DNS routing issues. You know what? My life still went on. Was there a lot of emails that were generated? Why can't I download this? I'm getting errors, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But did my life continue? Yes. Did my life fail because I relied on that third-party service to host my media files? No. Life went on.
Well, it is true that none of these things are, you know, 100% reliable.
Right.
I mean, for years I had my own servers, you know, co-located, and I did all of the admin on them. I had a total of five servers with my show and two different co-location facilities. Now, granted, back then I was hosting other people's shows too, but I mean, it's there is no safe path with this stuff. I mean, even using Libsyn, you know, things can happen there, and you can only kind of minimize your exposure, I guess. But things are going to go down. That's just the nature of it, and it's going to happen. Or your website's going to crash, or there's going to be some code problem on your WordPress blog. But I still think that as kind of a podcast kind of you know overall thinking here, that that maybe we need to start thinking about publishing podcasts even outside of a WordPress or a blog type of environment as a viable option for people, because I'm starting to wonder if the web is going to be as important in the long run. And maybe there needs to be a way for content providers to publish podcasts, you know, without having to use a WordPress type of blog.
Well, everything that we're feeding to these set-top boxes doesn't go in as pure RSS. We're having to write code to get them in. You know, how do you think we're getting distribution into to some of this stuff? It's, you know, it may have its genesis in RSS, and we take that core data and convert it and write an API and do a call to a device. But, you know, most of these new devices that are coming out that we're feeding stuff to is not... You know, it's not being fed via an RSS feed. That's been that way for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially on the set-top box side. Now, you know, your standard devices and stuff. But, you know, it's, let's face it, the stats still show, though, Rob, that, you know, the web is still a pretty high percentage of podcast consumption, along with, but, you know, no, you know, you know, what's sad is the iPad is rocking. The iPhone and just standard mobile devices, I would, at this point, I don't think I would ever invest in a mobile app, because I see the percentages and quite frankly, people aren't using apps to listen to content, not from a, you know, from a, it's well, such a small, tiny percentage. It's just, you know, less than 1%.
Yeah. I had an app. I was one of those first people who got denied by Apple. I have an app out there for my entire network, but, that's back in the early days of iPhone, the original iPhone, that was out there. But they've got all these podcast app solutions out there and stuff like that. I always tell people, I say, listen, you know, educate your audience on a podcatcher app, Pocket Casts, Downcast, stuff like that. Take some time and educate them how to subscribe to your podcast in one of those applications, and they'll thank you for it. Because now there's a good chance that because you only publish once a week, they might actually want to listen to podcasts other weeks. And with one application, they can consistently be getting fresh new content. And then all of a sudden, it's like all of a sudden you become at the top of the list because you're the latest, most released content. It constantly keeps your... But if you have an app and everybody else has a podcast app, then it's like, well, I've got to go into each of these, or I get these little badges and stuff. It just becomes so much. People don't want all those apps all over their phone, I don't think.
But even those apps, you know, I know what their percentages are. I see it from a very broad base. People aren't listening via apps. They're not. If your site isn't, when they come to your site, they better be able to hit play on your site in their Safari browser or whatever they've come into their site on.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I absolutely love PowerPress. I have every single one of my clients and students install it because it's got the Flash player for the site and it's got the HTML5 rollback. And that is the number one reason why I recommend everybody have PowerPress installed in WordPress.
Actually, it's HTML5 with Flash fallback. Opposite direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you would know better than me.
It's okay. Yeah. But I guess, you know, to wrap up this whole feed burner thing, I don't know. I hope it doesn't go away. As much as I'm a pundit of it, I don't want to have to deal with the nightmare of the consequences of such a thing. You know, because we would be forced at that point to try to help people. And people don't want to pay, and to begin with, for help, I think we'd lose a lot of people. I think people would just give up and say, forget it, I'm done. Because the steps to recovery are, to recover correctly is not going to be pretty. And you're going to lose people no matter what.
Well, and I would somewhat agree with those statements. Actually, I think deep down I would agree with most of those statements. But the one thing is I don't think it would be the end of the world.
And
anybody who cares enough about their content, they would be able to recover. There's a friend of mine who published a full hour long episode about the 90 day steps that you can follow to get almost everybody and stuff like that. And for me, I really believe that if FeedBurner ever went away, you're going to get at least 6 months notice. And by all means, switch everything over to a new feed. And for 3 months, end every single episode with, I've switched my feed, go over here. And then you basically, do the automatic redirects. It captures most everybody automatically. And then for everybody else, for the next, for the final 3 months of that 6 month period of time, you just put out there the most recent episode that says, if you're hearing my voice right now, you're subscribed to a feed that no longer exists. Here's my website address. Click on this button. Boom, we're good to go.
Hey, Rob, how would that affect you guys? How long would it take you guys to fix?
Well, it would take a long time because each of those shows would have to resubmit to us. And then I would have to go in and pull their old feed, their FeedBurner feed, out of the catalog manually. So it wouldn't just get pulled out automatically. It would have to be physically removed by me. So that's kind of how that would work. I mean, that would be a huge amount of work to actually deal with that situation. I've had large networks go through and change all their feeds. Actually, I just went through that with CNET, where they actually changed all their feeds over to FeedBurner. So it was about 2 weeks ago. I went through and pulled out all the old feeds for CNET and added all their new ones, and they're all FeedBurner feeds now.
Oh man, that's funny. I wonder if they're sitting back going,
Well, I don't think that they're really, really paying attention to this conversation.
That's probably true. All right, there's other stuff going on, so let me change up topics here. Let's talk about Google a little bit and their some things have been happening recently. It's continued to happen to me, but Google recently had a copyright crackdown where they punished an author for torrenting his own book. And it's pretty crazy. This guy wrote his own book. He wrote a book called Start Programming with Python. He decided to give the book away free as a thank you to the open source community, and which he noted had provided him tremendous value over the years. He has always made the book available for free and linked to various sources where you could get it. At the same time, he offered people the option to support him via donation. He also made a little bit of money via Google AdSense ads on his site. But last week, was contacted by a Google bot telling him that AdSense had been disabled because they claimed he was distributing copyrighted content illegally. The email basically says that, as stated in our program policies, AdSense publishers are not permitted to place Google ads on sites involved in the distribution of copyrighted materials. This includes hosting copyrighted files on your site, as well as providing links for driving traffic to sites that contain copyrighted materials. More information about this policy can be found at our help center. So basically, this guy was sending out a book, and he got canceled from the from AdSense. So
you know what I think about that, Todd? This is what happens when people rely on third-party services to distribute ads on your page. You really should be out there manually going out nailing down all of these deals and getting the ads placed on your site, hand coding.
But Cliff, the 99% of people aren't going to do that. They're going to do
I'm just kidding. That was just a joke.
I know.
Totally joking. But you know what? Here's the thing. These are bots. And the question about how do you handle a situation like that really is the same as FeedBurner. I mean, does AdSense, can you easily go in and email support at AdSense.com and say, hey, I got this email, but obviously this is my own I own the copyright to the book. This is my book. Can you please go in and reinstate my account and have my AdSense back up and running within the next 24 hours? I don't think so.
Well, you know,
I don't think it's not that easy, is it?
Well, you know, here this guy is out revenue now because,
yeah.
Because they think he's doing copyrighted material. So at what point do podcasters start losing their AdSense accounts because they're distributing podcasts that could be conceived to be copyrighted material? Now, what's happened to me as of late, and Revision 3 are having fun with this, is it seems that Revision 3 and Todd do a lot of content that are similar at CES. So Revision 3 is getting copyright violation notices of my content, and I'm getting copyright violation notices of their content on my content. So I'm getting notices, a 2007 video. Now, this is a 5-year video that's been up on YouTube, and I'm getting this, your content is in copyright violation of content that is owned by Revision 3. And I go in and review the content. I'm like, no, that's not my content. I protest this, and it goes over to Revision 3, and 2 or 3 days later, someone over there answers the email and says, yeah, he's right, it's not an infringement, and he clicks on a button, and then I get an email saying, hey, you've got Revision 3's infringing on your content, and I go over and look at the content, and I'm like, no, that's Revision 3's content, that's not mine, so what's going on is these dumb, stupid automated systems are creating a lot of trouble. And basically what happens is if you get enough of these copyright quote unquote violations, you're done. You get pulled from YouTube. Another thing that's been happening is, and we talked about this on a prior show, where everyone was covering the launch of Curiosity. And so I put a little clip up about we had a little hangout going and we're talking about it. We're showing some of the NASA video feed. And I basically got a copyright notice that my video was in violation of like 10 companies, AP, Fox, CNN, Al Jazeera. I mean, it was just this whole list of, and guess what? Al Jazeera got a copyright violation notice that they were copying Geek News Central's content and da 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 da. And it this whole system is broke. And they're so worried about taking down content that's in violation that they're just being overly aggressive. Now, what's bad is for all of us creating content, you know, I show stuff on my show. I can't put up video clips anymore because every time I put up a video clip, we get flagged. But you can't even, you know, our fair use rights are being infringed upon here. Is something, you know, where are we going to be here in a couple of years? If I show the picture of a website, like if I bring up this article on Tech Dirt like I am right now, am I going to get, is Google going to flag me for having that Tech Dirt image up on my video content here?
I think it's very possible. I mean, if they're looking at pixels and stuff like that, and frames and stuff like that with other content providers, I think that, yeah, I think that's the way that's the direction that this is going. And I don't know how to solve the issue other than to stop using anything that might match something somebody else is doing, but obviously that's not going to be the most favorable thing. So, but you're obviously wanting to have distribution on YouTube, and those are the rules that we're currently forced to play by. If we're putting on YouTube, we have to deal with those kind of bot issues. Is there any kind of petition that could be created?
But that's just not YouTube. this is a guy that had his own website. Now, remember,
That's AdSense, though. He's still, we're talking about two different things. You're talking about publishing. Yep. The NASA clip was the YouTube.
Right.
And
right.
The ads. So these are two different set topics almost.
But they're also interrelated because Google has said that they are going to start depreciating sites that they consider being distributing copyrighted material. They're going to start
penalizing them.
You're not even going to know. All of a sudden, your traffic's going to fall off. You're going to like, where'd my traffic go? And it was because Google depreciated your site because they assumed by indexing. This is all tied together. This is, again, another topic. So you've got them depreciating websites because they assume that you're violating copyright. They took this guy's AdSense account and deactivated it because they assumed he was doing copyrighted material. And they hammer Todd because they think I'm using Revision 3's content where we weren't, but it, just because the bot said so. You've got all these bots that are all of a sudden saying, you're all criminals. And none of us are criminal. Well, some people are criminals, but those of us that, okay, you know what I'm saying? You know, the guys that are out there doing legitimate content, legitimate writing, legitimate coverage are being penalized because of all the bad stuff, the rogue people out on the internet. And it's pretty scary because sometimes you have no recourse.
Yeah. Well, and who is being protected by this? Is it Google or the content provider?
Well,
I think.
In my case, they were trying to protect Revision 3. You know, and Revision 3 was like, that's not my content. You know?
Well, also they were trying to protect you
right.
from Al Jazeera.
Did I ask them to do that?
No, you didn't. But they're looking out for you, Todd.
And they're
looking out for you.
And you know what? And my content on YouTube is published under guess what? Creative Commons.
Yeah, so it's almost like the whole concept of fair use has gone out the window now.
Yeah.
So it's just gone. And I really wonder if it's just a knee-jerk reaction to the big Viacom and Google lawsuit. And it's just an overreaction on the risk that Google sees for their YouTube platform. It's really just to cover their legal vulnerabilities, right? And they're going overboard here.
I think it's just going to get worse before it gets better. And I just laugh because, you know, I sent Jim an email and I said, dude, check this email out. And he laughed. He replied back. Okay, yeah, we'll watch it. And then, you know, I got vice versa. So you know, you just think about how did that Google engine and I was looking at the spot that they flagged. And what it was Andy and I were standing around some signage, and mm-hmm. I'm sure what happened was that signage got registered with Revision 3, and then somehow they went back and they said, oh, that signage matches, and there must have been enough pixels in there to kick it. So yep. It's incredible. It really is.
It's a broken system. There's no question. I got a question for you, if we can lead off that, and tell me if you just want to move on to your next topic. But you talked about the fact that, you know, the this isn't just answering some emails and saying no and handling that mess, but they're going to depreciate your rankings in Google. I'm wondering, how long is Google going to stay on the top of this search engine thing? I'm at the place now where, you know, I've never really binged. But maybe I might start binging a little bit more, and with the iPhone and stuff like that, with Siri, you know, Siri's not always pulling content off of Google anymore. So I wonder if they're in a couple years from now that the number one question of how much traffic we get on our site isn't how well we're doing in Google ranks.
Well, with over 10,000 articles on Geek News Central, I get a lot of traffic from Google. So it hurt me immensely if I lost Google.
Yeah, today it would. I'm just saying, would it have the same impact 5 years from now?
Well, if
Bing it on, if, Bing it on,
if,
guys.
Yeah, if Bing starts driving me traffic, we'll Bing more.
well, the question, and so as content creators, I think you all would imagine if we have an audience, we have some amount of influence. Well, why don't we say in our shows and say, hey, I just Googled this the other day. Why don't we just start saying, hey, I was Binging. You know, I was out there on Bing the other day and I found this result. And before you know it, more and more people start Bing. Whatever. That's how I found Google. Somebody mentioned Googling things. And then all of a sudden I start Googling.
I'm sure Microsoft would like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
When was the last time you did a Yahoo.com search?
Oh, gosh, years ago.
When was the last time I actually ever went to the website? That's the question.
You know, speaking of which, let's look. I'll be honest with you. I probably haven't loaded yahoo.com. Wow. I wouldn't have been able to tell you what this looked like if...
Actually, it looks about the same as it did about 10 years ago.
Yeah, it doesn't look much different. So let's do a search.
It doesn't.
I think it's the same searches as Bing. So if we take
it. Oh, it is. Yeah, it's the same as Bing.
So if we do that, and let's go over to Bing, and we'll see what kind of results. I think it'll probably look a little different, but.
Yeah, it's all driven by Bing. Yeah.
It's formatted almost exactly the same.
That's yeah, I think funny. Bing is going to keep gaining market share, and I think as you see them fold in the capability more and more with Facebook and things like that, it's going to become a much more compelling type of offering. I think what's happening to Google is they're becoming their own social media platform, and that's going to limit their future, I think.
That's why they're... Go ahead.
I agree. I was just going to say, Google Plus, I hate it. I mean, I love their Hangouts. Their Hangouts are brilliant. But I hate the social network. I don't like the aesthetics of it, anything like that. And the fact that I'm starting to get other people who use Google Plus are getting special treatment, I'm penalized in the rankings for not using it. So I'm certainly a lot less loyal to Google search today as a result of Google Plus. And it seems that they're forcing every single one of their products and services down the Google Plus, you know, route. And I don't know, that's frustrating me.
Well, I'll tell you about Google Plus. I have 100 times better conversations in Google Plus than I do in Facebook. You know, Facebook's for fans, Google Plus is for intelligent conversations.
I have the exact opposite scenario. Yeah. Absolutely opposite.
You know, I see family pictures. Let me preface that. The communities on Facebook are cool, but my normal Facebook stream is largely, you know, I'm going to a doctor's appointment. Let me bring in a point.
Well, yeah, you get what you put on. Yeah. I mean, you get back what you invest. But I got rid of my page a long time ago, my Facebook page. And as soon as they got the subscribers, people can subscribe to your personal feed. My personal brand and my business brand are about the same. So I use my personal profile just as I would have a brand page. I know Facebook that doesn't like that, but that's the way I use it. And I get tons of engagement.
Well, you know, here's what's up on my Facebook page. There's a cousin of mine, football game. We've got a marriage, wedding anniversary announcement, cousin's volleyball game. I've got a friend from high school, someone's, my niece's lunch in Japan.
You're looking at your timeline, your actual newsfeed or timeline, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I do there, Todd, is I never go to Facebook.com. I always go there through a shortcut. And my shortcut is actually hardwired to go into a list that I create. So I actually have a list of, it's called people I follow, and it doesn't have family. Well, it does. It's got my mom and my sister in it, but it's also got all those people that I really value, what's going on and stuff like that as they're publishing stuff. it's hot. It's the people who would be in my top circle on Google Plus are in this list on Facebook called People I Follow. And that list gets its own news feed. And so my Facebook experience is 100% relevant and completely tailored to what I want.
Yeah.
Like when you click on those circles, you can see just the news feed of what's going on in circles. It's about the same thing. The only thing is Facebook has a more aesthetic look. And I'm really big into aesthetics.
Well, I'm more into conversations. And I just find my Google Plus conversations and data that I get out of it. You just don't see cat pictures and all the crap that you
see. I don't see those either.
Well, you're one of the few people that do then, because I think the majority of us, I don't use shortcuts to go. You go to Facebook, Rob. How do you go to Facebook?
I just go to my wall, just like you do.
Yeah.
Well, since we're on this topic, there are two things I want to bring up, Todd. Number one, Google, I use Google Chrome, and I use this thing called Speed Dial 2. If you haven't ever heard of it, I encourage you to check it out. It gives you a bunch of tiles on your desktop, on your browser, and every time you open a new tab, it has these high-quality tabs. And the cool thing is for $1.99, you can get a pro account that's lifetime. And if you open it up on your Chrome browser on a different computer, it syncs your tiles. So it's kind of like it's better than bookmarking. So every time I open my browser, immediately Facebook's staring me there, Twitter's staring me there, and stuff like that. So that's how I do that. But going off of that topic, how about this? I'm excited about the comeback of MySpace.
Haven't been over there yet and looked at it.
Check it out. Pull it up on your screen. You might get pulled down.
I never used MySpace when MySpace was hot. So
go to new.myspace.com. It's coming back. I predicted this in May of last year. It was on sale for $100 million. And I was going to possibly create a campaign and see if I could raise $100 million to buy it, because I thought it was worth it. And we had this argument back and forth. I said, listen,
that's what I see for new. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, give it a second. But anyway, there's a little video down there that Justin Timberlake last July took ownership stake in this thing. And if you click the video, you can pot down the music, but just play the video. It's going to be beautiful.
If we play the video, we'll get copyright flag.
Okay. Well, I will tell you what, it looks beautiful, and it's kind of the best of all social networks rolled into the new MySpace. I'm saying it right here on September 29th. 2012 on Geek News Central. Let me tell you, the new MySpace is going to be a topic that's going to be coming up, and it's going to give Twitter and Google Plus and Facebook a run for its money.
From what I've heard, it looks like Flipboard.
It looks a little bit like Flipboard and Pinterest. But I think what you're going to have is with Justin Timberlake behind it, he's going to bring what was the strongest thing that MySpace had, and that was its music community. And as a content producer, if they give content creators the ability to have play buttons and you can load up and say, hey, come to my profile and click this button and listen to this track, click this button and listen to this track. I'll tell you what, as a content creator, a podcast producer, I'm looking forward to setting up my new MySpace profile when it comes out.
Well, we're almost out of time. We spent a lot of time on FeedBurner, and I've got a hard deadline today to get out of here. But I do want to talk real quick about the total blowing of iOS 6 and Apple Maps. You know, what's your guys' take? Yeah, I upgraded to iOS 6 yesterday, had been gone and, knew what I was going to get. And I loaded the maps up and no more zooming down and getting a, street view or none of that stuff. What were they thinking?
Rob, you want to take it first?
I think they just rushed to market with it. And I don't know. It just looks like, I hope this isn't, for Apple's sake, I hope this isn't a sign of things to come in the future as far as how they build products.
I don't think Steve Jobs, if he was still alive, would have allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
I think... aesthetically, he would have been just like, no way.
Yeah, because the problems with this are so blatant. I'm just blown away that they didn't get noticed before it went live.
And for him to come out and apologize and basically recommend different maps, you know, okay, here's how good it was. I'm in Tokyo and I put a Japanese address in, hit route. I was able to walk the route in 22 minutes, told me where to go, where to turn, got me to my location. So I got home, upgraded. So just for giggles, I loaded that same address in the new system. I would have never found where I was going. I would have had to have gone to maps.google.com on the browser and done it that way. And, you know, be honest with you, when you're on international plans, you don't want to use too much data. So I was, you know, limiting my amount of data exchange. I was doing roaming because I was only allowed 150 megs the entire time I was there. So I was on Wi-Fi a lot of the time, but sometimes when I was mobile, I needed to bring up data. And, you know, I would have been really in the hurt locker. So it's pretty incredible. And I rely on that a lot to find stuff and street view, you know, being able to look at, okay, that's the building I'm going to. You know, it just shows you how much I guess I'll be using my iPad a lot more to look up locations and stuff.
Well, and Bing Maps is outstanding too. I mean, there's so many other better options than what Apple put out here. It's just crazy that they just didn't do a partnership.
And then the issues that they've had with the quality of the maps too. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. You know, it makes you have some thoughts that, okay, are they not on their A game anymore? Have they slipped to a second best? That Samsung Galaxy 3 looks like pretty doggone nice phone. You know,
I will say this: I am a true Apple fanboy. I had the original iPhone all the way up through. I've got the iPhone 4. I waited on the iPhone 4S. I said, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'll just wait for the iPhone 5. So I've waited a long time. I don't have an iPhone 5 yet. And I wanted an iPhone 5. I probably will get an iPhone 5. But this is the first time I ever considered getting an Android phone. And the Samsung Galaxy S3 sure does look nice. And anybody who knows me knows that that's saying something.
Well, my wife is like, I want the Samsung. You know, she saw it. I've told her about it, but she saw it on TV the other day. I said, oh, look at that phone. She's, you know, screaming at me, come in here. Which phone is that? And I'm like, that's the phone I've been telling you about.
Yeah. I do want Siri though. So
I've played with Siri on the iPad and, I said, who's the best tech podcaster? And it says, I don't have a location for that. So, you know, Siri was automatically depreciated in my view. Because
I can tell you right now, I need Siri for one thing and one thing only. Two things. Siri, in 45 minutes, please remind me to go get McKenna from school. You know, that's one. And when I'm out of town and I'm at a conference, I need Siri. Where's the closest Chipotle?
That's great.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I had a whole bunch.
Hey guys, I wanted to ask you, what do you guys think of the podcast app on the iOS 6?
It's getting better.
Well,
but it's not great.
I don't have my iPad here. Yes, I do. Hang on. I'm going to show you something, Rob. This is what I like about it. All right. Let me get the iPad out. And they fixed it. So, okay. So if I go to Safari and I go to geeknewscentral.com. So I go to geeknewscentral.com. It's loading. And I don't even have to click on the iTunes link. Let's say I just click on my RSS feed. Let me pick one here. The Gadget Professor. Let me show you what's happening here. It loaded it in the podcast app.
Sweet. Any RSS that has media enclosures?
That's right.
That is awesome.
You subscribe right there. says subscribe. So I'm going to go ahead and hit subscribe. Boom. Right
there.
Dude,
that's awesome.
And you didn't have to have the iTunes. I don't have to click the iTunes link. I just click the RSS feed. So now, if I was a listener, they don't even have to use the iTunes link. They use just my standard RSS feed, my geeknewscentral.com/podcast.xml feed. And now they're subscribed to
nice
that.
Plug there.
They're subscribed to that feed, not even the iTunes link.
Yep. That's awesome. I like that.
That is one of the best features that they've added. And that, to me, is going to make it real easy for anyone on an iOS device. You want to subscribe, just click on that orange, just click on my link. You know, and it'll load and it'll basically bring the subscribe button up and you hit subscribe and you're done.
I haven't got my iPhone 5 yet, but does the podcast app come pre-installed?
No, but as soon as you do an app update, it said these apps are new and it shows them in a group. We recommend that you install these, and I'm sure most people are just going to say install.
Yeah.
Fewer and fewer podcasters are actually putting their RSS feed on their website.
Well, if they don't, they won't make the list when they are nominated in the podcast awards.
Yeah. Well, that's a different conversation, but yeah, you're right.
Less competition for me, man. Less competition.
Now, basically, we preface that with as long as it's auto-detectable, if you can see it, basically, when it loads in a browser, we'll let them pass. But you're right. A lot of podcasters don't have an RSS feed on their website. They just have an iTunes link, you know. So, you know, I think it's pretty dumb because, you know, what do they do? They're excluding, you know, 50% of the devices that are out there. So you can tell who does that and who doesn't. You can see it in their stats because the folks that have, you know, the variety of ways to subscribe, they have this large base of, you know, of devices that are actually consuming their content. And the guys that have strictly an iTunes link on their website, you look at their stats and it's iTunes.
It's all iTunes.
Yep. And they've just completely crapped on that other 50% of their audience that is not on an iOS 6 device or iOS device. So
yeah. Also, hey guys, I wanted to ask you another question. Where else, if you guys could put podcasting in someplace new, as far as in a platform or in a new platform in a new way or in a new place, where would that be?
Oh, let's see, we've got it in mobile. We've got it in tablets. We've got it on the web. We have it on set-top boxes. Or where would I put it? I'd put it on mainstream broadcast television. I'd have a dedicated channel on TV.
No, I think my question was more about should the capability to consume podcasts and basically find podcasts be like built into like Facebook?
Radios is the big one.
Twitter and these social media platforms.
Well, you can put a media link in Twitter now.
No, but actually built into it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
The actual service itself.
There was some folks that had some third party stuff where you could record and it would push to Twitter, and you're not going to play it in Twitter. Facebook is already done. Well, that's a good question. Cliff, any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the biggest thing for me is getting the content available in an in-car stereo. I know Stitcher's working on apps and stuff like that, but I would love to see, you know, every brand new car within the next 3 years, where every brand new car has the ability for you to type in an RSS feed or to go through a directory and subscribe and have playable on-demand content from us on the car radio.
I won't say why. I won't say why I was in Japan.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think it's the future. I think it's happening. And matter of fact, a friend of mine got in his car. If you go to my Facebook fan page, it's or not fan page, but page. It's facebook.com/CliffRavenscraft. There's a picture on my wall. So I have a guy that says, here's what I'm looking at. And he plugged his phone into his rental car stereo. And it's got the meta tags and metadata from my most recent episode of Podcast Answer Man. And he's like, dude, this is so cool. And I'm just like, I can't wait for the day where the phone is not necessary for you to do that.
The Ford Sync, now you can start playing your show on your mobile device. You can go to your car and it will transfer to the car and pick up where you left off. Now that was something that I had talked about back in 2004. That was my dream, is to be able to be watching on my TV or listening on my whatever device, and then as soon as I get in my car, it to be picked up, not through the device itself, but through the car. And that is now a feature in Ford Sync. Is it seamless? I don't know, but I know the feature's there. You're supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah. Hey guys, I saw in a CNET car tech video that came out, I think it was on Friday. I guess there's a Japan auto show or something like that that's going on this past week that shows an iPad in the console that's right behind the steering wheel. So you basically drop your Slate device in a slot, and that becomes your speedometer and your media player and your maps and all that stuff for the car. It's like it's the computer for the car, and then you just pop it out and take it with you.
It's kind of weird. So
that was an interesting kind of model mock-up that they had at this show of where, you know, these devices could become central to operating all sorts of things in our homes and our cars. And I don't know, it's an interesting idea to think about.
Well, guys, I need to pull the plug here or I'm going to have a very angry wife in a few minutes. So any closing comments? Cliff, where can they find you?
Just find me over at podcastanswerman.com. And if you haven't started podcasting yet, go and start today. Learnhowtopodcast.com.
And Rob, these days, where are they? Whoops, wrong button. Where are you hanging out these days, Rob?
RobGreenlee.com and at Rob Greenlee is my Twitter. So I guess it's on the screen.
Well, this time went fast. I think we ought to have you back, Cliff. I think we could probably explore a lot more stuff. Nice heated debate on Feedburner, and this audience is going to be like, we don't want to ever hear another thing about Feedburner ever again.
Hopefully we'll never have to, but it's been a pleasure to be on the show. I can't be on here that often on a Saturday, but every now and then, Todd, keep inviting me. I'd love to come back from time to time. This is fun.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And Rob, thanks for taking time out of your schedule too. And for the audience that's out there, I didn't have any. The stream was kind of dead today from a chat session, so I don't know if because I've been gone a couple of weeks, people forgot I did the show and didn't come out. But it's all good. It'll go up in podcast format here in a couple of hours. But for everyone that's been here, don't forget you can email me here geeknews@gmail.com on Twitter @geeknews. Saturday Morning Tech is done every Saturday that I am in Honolulu. And I'll be here, I think, for a couple of weeks. And so anyway, definitely don't forget the Monday and Thursday show, Geek News Central, Gadget Professor, Robot Underpants, and, of course, periodically, the Chrome Show at chromeshow.com. So everyone take care. We'll see you next time. Thanks for hanging out. Aloha.